builds community. And most importantly, I mean, if you ever drive around TV Highway, I know we all see people cutting across the road during rush hour to get to a bus. It's not safe. I mean, there are a lot of fatalities on that road every year. It's devastating. So just, I really encourage our listeners to contribute to Metro. What do you want to see in the future of our transportation system? You know, the data shows that there was this number, I think it was from a very recent 3-year span. I'm not going to give the specific numbers because I can't remember them. Mm-hmm. But traffic recently has gotten worse by 30%.
You mentioned, when you talked about your area, District 4, Washington County, you mentioned the growing Latino leadership and talked about the history of it. Sir, you were just elected. You've discussed a lot of your goals for Metro. What are the goals for Juan Carlos? And where are you going to be so that we can find you?
My goal is to just do as well as I can. When I took my oath, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, you know, I'm going to live my values and lead with my values and vote with my values. And I'm going to vote so close to my values that I'll be voted out of office, right? At the same time, you know, I've had an opportunity to work on a lot of issues that I really care about. And, you know, at the heart of everything that guides my policy compass is, one, making sure that Washington County gets its fair share, because this regional conversation, regional funding, I mean, it's only growing and it's getting stronger. And I think that we can see that across the past few regional metros that we've had. People just, they see it, right? Issues don't stop at a city or a county line, and we're interconnected across the region. What guides my policymaking framework is Washington County getting its fair share and leading with climate justice, making sure that we have clean water, we have clean air for the future, that our green spaces program for the region and our love for nature and parks is not something that we lose as we continue to densify, as more people move here. I think that's super important that we keep onto that. I mean, that's what makes me love this place so much. And ultimately, that we lead with a racial equity lens, and that we lead with good policy and a good framework that helps us help the people experiencing the biggest disparities to close those gaps. And I think by the nature of closing those gaps, it helps everyone else.
Juan Carlos, thank you very much for sharing your time with Inside Washington County today.
Thank you, sir.
And I am grateful. Really appreciate the work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
You got it.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
What it do, my folks? You are listening to Culture in Motion, and this is going to be the third episode that Ryan Danley and I have recorded together.
What's up?
Weekly, twice monthly show talking about the intersection of art, culture, politics, entertainment, activism, and so on. Being that we're talking about culture, we're talking about a cultural moment and a cultural shift, which is culture in motion. And the cultural shift that we're talking about is something that we're all going through. So it's not like we're going to be talking about something that only Ryan and I are privy to. And today we wanted to talk about what, Ryan?
I think that the stimulus package is on everybody's mind in this unique moment that we're living in here.
The stimulus package. This is not the first time in my life I've heard that term. I was asking you if you've gotten your stimulus package.
You know, I haven't gotten it yet. I didn't do direct deposit on my tax refunds,
right,
for whatever reason. And so now I'm waiting for a check. I've tried to check the IRS website, but I'm on the no information or whatever, the line that they say their list. So I'm just going to hope old Daddy Donald Trump leaves $1,200 on my nightstand at some point, you know.
Okay. Santa Trump. Donald Claus come down the chimney and leave $1,200 check. what do you think about the amount of $1,200?
Well, I mean, I think that we're it's, I mean, I live in Portland, Oregon. I mean, $1,200 doesn't go very far here. I mean, like, you know, I'm like, you know, I hate to be like that guy or feel like, you know, like non-grateful for the money. But yeah. But on the other hand, it's like, you know what? Like, if you're looking to kickstart a stimulus, I mean, if you want to drop $1,200 on like some small town in Nebraska, that would probably would be successful for them. But
yeah.
I mean, $1,200 now as somebody who's been laid off due to this virus, and I mean, $1,200 isn't going to even scratch the surface of what I need to keep moving. Never mind stimulate an economy.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to be using that $1,200 to, you know, spend more money at a restaurant or do the things that you would hope that money would go to, like, keep things. I'm gonna be using it to keep my head above water.
Yeah. And in that regard, you know, there's always, when looking at a chunk of money that might come in, a lump sum that's not earned income, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like a tax return. But although that's, you know, we could argue about whether a tax return is earned income or not, because it comes out of your wages, right?
Yep.
So you get a chunk of money, like the money you used to get from grandma or something, right? And then you have the choice of spending it all on one to two big expenses,
mm-hmm.
or spreading it out over a bunch of little expenses. And I know a lot of our listeners can relate to this. Or maybe you just say, screw it, and you have a good time, because right. you're like, you don't want to see it gone so quickly.
Exactly.
You're like, well, I'll stretch it out on junk food and partying, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be pretty, I mean, it is weird to get that money and, like, have nowhere to go with it, you know? And,
right.
And so it's like, for the first time, it's like, everyone's like, well, here's $1,200. And it's like, well, I can order food, but I'm not going to go travel with it. I'm not going to, you know, and I'm not going to go to... You know, and I think the scary part is like, we're not going to go to the coast or to those places. The responsible folks aren't, in my opinion, folks aren't going to the towns that are really being decimated by it.
Right.
You know, like tourist towns out on the coast and things like that, who count on these summer seasons to keep their head above water, you know?
But, well, so that reminds me of like when I go out right now, because I do get out of the house. It's mm-hmm. important for my mental health.
Sure.
So I'm going out to make my essential trips to the grocery store. You know, periodically I'm going to the gas station, right?
Right.
And other than that, you know, just have a little variety in life. Every now and then I will pick up a meal from a restaurant.
Sure.
You know, because I'm still working from home. Sometimes I'm tired. I don't feel like cooking.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, what I notice on the street is that there's a lot of traffic out here.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is, even though we've been encouraged to stay at home, it's not really being enforced.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes I'll be listening to news with reports from what's going on in other cities, and it sounds like things are a little less flexible
sure.
in other cities. Like, these curfews are really being enforced. Mm-hmm. So what concerns me now is we're hearing that Oregon, Washington, California are going to be looking to open business back up
mm-hmm.
to the extent that they can. What nobody really knows is how that might affect bumping the curve back up.
And I mean, I think that's like I think that's the dangerous part of this whole thing, is like, yeah. where's that balance? I personally think that we should be staying home as long as possible,
mm-hmm.
because I think the worst thing that could happen is that it bumps back up and then we got to do this again, because
mm-hmm.
you think like a dead economy sucks now, let's try it twice, you know? And so I'm a big fan of things kind of staying the way they are until we get that curve to really flat, you know? And,
okay.
You know, I heard that they're opening up beaches in Florida today.
Yeah, and people have different ideas about what social distance is. I've seen a lot of young people out, and I don't want to encourage people scapegoating the younger people,
absolutely.
You know, in the populace. But, you know, as older people that have more nuclear family style relationships, I think are going to be more inclined to be consistent
yeah.
with who they're around and mm-hmm. maintaining social distance to a tight circle.
Right.
Whereas I've encountered some younger people, not only through my work through Portland Public Schools, in doing distance learning in the classroom, which is basically Zoom and Google Hangouts and chats, but also in just observing on the street. And I'm seeing like people are like, nah, we need to be around each other.
Right.
You know, we need that interaction. So we're not there might be a group of you know, anywhere from 6 to 12 people who you're looking at them and you're like, well, that's not really, that doesn't look like social sure. distancing based on what I've encountered. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. It is what it is. And people have an innate need.
And I totally agree. I think, yeah. you know, I mean, the unfortunate thing is that, because I mean, I agree. Like, I mean, I mean, for all intents and purposes, I'm a social person. I miss my interactions with people. I miss my stand-up comedy community. I mean, I miss just even seeing, like, people that I'm not even close with, like, week by week. And, you know, I miss mm-hmm. I miss just, like, going to a restaurant, like, sitting there with, like, a friend and, like, eating a meal and like, having somebody else, do, you know, pay, do a dish. You know what I mean? Like, nah. just, like, stuff, you know? And yeah. That being said, though, I mean, I think it's just really important to remember that, like, if we're not safe, we put essential workers' lives in danger. We put, you know, I mean, if you're an essential worker who lives with somebody with a, you know, an immune disorder, and you have to go to work, and then somebody's deciding to, like, oh, I guess got to go do my shit, yeah, or like, yeah, you know, yeah, that yeah, it's
you do your stuff,
at least do your stuff, and then you go to, and the next thing you know, they're on it, you know,
right. So here's something. With the something I've noticed is that there's often pundits will be talking about, especially in more mainstream media, they'll be saying things like, especially pundits that are coming from the right,
mm-hmm.
they'll say, well, we don't want to politicize the issue, which to me is code for we don't want to talk about things in a way that are actually critical,
sure.
right? Because what you got to look at is right now with these protests happening, we got people that are largely pro-Trump
mm-hmm.
that would be, if we would identify them on the spectrum, they're going to be on the right. And they've got guns and they're saying, we want to go back to work. But then when I listen to people talking to representatives from that movement, if we could call it that, what we're going to hear is we're going to say, well, you guys always want to politicize it. We just want to go back to work. But there's nothing about that isn't political. As a matter of fact, it's intensely political for them to be taking firearms into the public space.
Absolutely.
And saying, we want to go back to work.
Right.
You know, it's nothing less than a political statement.
I mean, I think when they say it doesn't want to be political, it's just a way to disarm you so that in anything that you say to them, they're like, oh, now you're the problem. You're the starter of this.
Right.
It's a classic diversion.
Gaslight, non-accountability.
Exactly. Like, oh,
right.
You're the problem. I just want to, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the hypocrisy and the comedy of this whole thing is like blowing my mind. I mean, 2 years ago, we had people coming up on a caravan of like the poorest people in the world that were gonna like destroy America and like
right.
and kill us and be terrorists and all of this stuff, and the same people now are just like, oh, like a global pandemic, like one of like the classic destroyers of humanity in the history of the world isn't worth saving us against. I mean, where do you draw that line? Why even, like, if you don't care about our safety, if you don't care about anything, why do we do anything? You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, like, why even have, like, an army or any, you know what I mean? Like, if we don't even care about, like, the basic truth of, like, diseases kill people.
Right.
And the best way to stop disease contagions is to keep people away from each other. Why wouldn't you just, like, ride that out for a month?
You know? Well, you know, I think self-interest gets politicized
mm-hmm.
in that in the self-righteous mind of the individualistic American, which often is an identity that's in alignment with patriarchy, white supremacy, and sure. capitalism, and individuals' rights over the rights of the masses.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to find is people who somehow imagine themselves as above what the common person is vulnerable to, right? Like, I don't get sick. I'm not gonna get sick. And if I get sick, well, then I'll deal with it. And that's gonna be my problem. But nobody has a right to tell me what to do. But in that mindset is the belief that you're actually a little bit immune to what people who might be poorer than you
mm-hmm.
or might have darker skin than you or different sex organs than you are experiencing. And that's problematic, because in that environment you're actually not immune, you actually are vulnerable, and you could be further reinforcing what's destructive, you know?
So are you telling me that the right wing in this country,
yeah,
is prejudiced?
Right. Did not dance around that real well.
Yeah. Is that what you're trying to tell me here?
The fact that I can dance around it real well, you know, that is a product, result, and consequence of white supremacy, because I've had to figure out how to communicate in ways that are not only seen as non-threatening, mm-hmm. but are also so intellectually on point that I disarmed it.
No, and I appreciate right. that. I mean, at some point we just have to say, I'm so tired of having this argument with people.
Yeah.
Not all Trump supporters are racist. And not all, like,
come you know, on, well, like, dude.
Like supporting like what's going on in this country now, and that movement, which uh-huh. comes straight out of, like, I mean, you and I both know the white supremacy, their playbook, and mm-hmm. this is what they're playing straight out of. And it, you know, I'm sorry, but supporting that, like, is a racist action.
It's a racist action, and you can't deny it. You know, and well. We're in what some people would call the echo chamber. We both agree.
Yeah.
You know, we're preaching to the choir. I'm sure a lot of the listeners to Culture in Motion agree with us too. And a lot of this stuff isn't worth arguing about because there's only going to be more cognitive dissonance. I do periodically poke people online. Mm-hmm. There was a picture of a man with a swastika flag at one of the protests, the pro go back to work. Mm-hmm. Anti-quarantine protests, and the flag said Trump Pence. So now, looking at the flag, one would assume that this man was part of the protest and he was a supporter of white supremacy. But in the comments below the picture, people were really angry. They were like, not all Trump supporters are racist. One guy was like, I'm a Jew and I support Trump. And how could you post something so inflammatory? And I was like, well, it's not about anyone saying that you're a racist, but the dude in the picture has a swastika.
I don't know what do you want here?
Anyway,
and I mean, and I think that's, you know, always been my thing, is that people can say, well, you know, I mean, saying I'm not a racist, a and first time anybody says I'm not a racist, I know that they're, you know, full of it, oh really, it all stopped at your toes,
right?
But like, the big thing for me is like racism, like as an individual effort versus like supporting the overall system of like racism, are two different, you know what I mean? Where we all sit on the spectrum is going to be varied, but ultimately, like, your individual racism isn't going to, in my opinion, in the bigger scope of things, if you're supporting an overall racist system, is arguably worse than just being like somebody who thinks something stupid, you know?
Like, somebody who doesn't like somebody isn't necessarily as harmful as somebody that's supporting a system that actually has the power to destroy people's lives.
Exactly.
Yeah. Huh. So it's back, rewinding a little bit to the stimulus check. That's basically, it's not a paper check coming in the mail, mm-hmm. from my understanding. You said you know some people who've had it directly deposited into their bank accounts. So I had to do a little research, because there's been a lot of rumors going around about whether or not we were going to get this money and then owe it back to the government or owe it back to the IRS if we had outstanding debt, mm-hmm. Debt in arrears. So Congresswoman AOC tweeted, I want to read this for the listeners, sure. so they can see what she tweeted. And then I have another page I would like to read just to get people up to speed and informed on what the objective information is out here about how we get the money. So first of all, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said, there are a lot of fake memes going around about the $1,200 stimulus checks. Just got asked about it in the elevator. So she says, to clarify, you do not have to pay back your stimulus check next year. Your stimulus check is not taxable. The stimulus check is yours to keep, no take backs. So, okay. That's more positive than negative.
Sure.
And then on the government-y, that's government, G-O-V-E-R-N-M-E-N-T, hub website. There's 2020 stimulus checks. Get Corona Virus Relief Cash Payments. So then you can click on that, and you're going to be taken to governmenty.com. So government, how that's spelled with a Y at the end, .com. And I've got a table of contents, stimulus checks and financial assistance, on and on, all the way down to small business assistance. So what it says here under stimulus checks and financial assistance, stimulus checks for American families, stimulus checks to help ease the economic strain caused by the coronavirus, COVID-19, will be sent to the vast majority of Americans in the coming days and weeks. Most Americans will not need to do anything in order to receive their checks, while some will be required to update their information before getting a check. Federal tax filing deadline extended. The tax filing deadline was extended to July 15, 2020. So if you owe the IRS money, you can wait until then to file your taxes without penalty. Otherwise, do your taxes now so you can get a refund sooner. 401k and IRA early withdrawal. Penalty suspended. So people under 59 and a half years old can temporarily withdraw up to $100,000 from their 401k retirement plan without a 10% penalty. Student loan payments and interest is suspended. Federal student loan and PLUS loan payments and interest have been automatically suspended for 6 months until September 30th, 2020. Interest on loans will again start to accrue after the six-month freeze. And borrowers currently in default will have no action taken against them, including garnishment of wages or tax refunds withheld until further notice. So I just wanted to share that. Sure. So, you know.
I mean, that's really helpful stuff. I mean, like my car payment, Wells Fargo put off my for 3 months since I got laid off. But they're going to still, I mean, nothing against that. I'm glad, I'm happy to have that program, but I'm still going to get charged interest those months. So some ways it'll behoove them to let us take the break, because I'll just pay those on the backside. It's not like it gets free and then and the additional money of it. So, but on the other hand, though, I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have that. So, yeah, I mean, it's nice that they're not making it pay us back. I mean, I remember George W., he gave us all like $350.
Did he?
Yep. And then we all found out on the next tax that that we had to pay it back.
Okay.
So this will be a better situation for that. There's some talks about trying to push through a $2,000 a month situation. I mean, I don't want to get anybody excited about that, but I know that's in talks right now to try to, you know, reach more people with the money.
Well, I heard the price on United States oil went to minus $37 a barrel. So they're producing oil too fast for us to consume it, too fast for them to store it, too fast for them to sell it. So they're actually paying people to take the oil off their hands. We all know how central oil is to the automobile-based economy. You know, until everything switches to electric, if that ever happens, or alternate forms of energy as far as vehicles that are moving, that's gonna have some ramifications that affect the rest of society.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, you're a former driver, a laid off driver, as well as, you know, a writer, but having that dual income, you know how important it is for goods to be distributed. Oh, yeah. Through the use of fossil fuel.
You're right. I mean, besides even like, so it's going to get cheap, and then, I mean, and that's going to sound great for a while, but what we're going to end up with is some inflation, you know what I mean? I'm not an economist, clearly, but like, you know, I wouldn't, you know, but, you know, the bounce back from this is going to be rough, because when there is that negative, they have to do it. So we might be looking at some weird inflation stuff afterwards as that deals with all these sorts of things, but particularly when we get in the recession. So, I mean, This will be a long journey.
I want to make time to look up some economic facts. You know, like you mentioned, you're not an economist. I'm not an economist, but it would probably benefit us all to look up inflation
Sure.
and deflation, and how inflation and deflation influence recession and depression. Yep. You know, because what I wish we had is I wish we had a system in place that was already, I guess, effective as far as an alternate economic system, because then we would have something to step into mm-hmm. and to transition into that would relieve, that would soften the blow that we're all going to be facing.
Yeah, but that would be really un-American.
Well,
that would, you know, you might as well start wearing a beret, because that's gonna be they don't want none of that. I mean, any sort of question of the of our economic system just seems to really scare a lot of people. And
you said might as well wear a beret, but what about special forces? I mean, they wear berets.
I'm
being facetious, right? But right. The logical, if we look at history, and I don't want to scare anybody, but I'm scared, so I'm going to just share it with you. Mm-hmm. The logical progression when you have economic crisis of this scale is you go to war.
Right.
Because war is the only thing left that's going to generate untold profits mm-hmm. For the rulers, the elite.
Yep.
So right now we have the opportunity to go in a way to walk away from some things that haven't been working for the majority of the Earth's population and really think critically about how do we create something different. I know that there's a lot of mutual aid coming out of necessity in different ways for people sharing resources right now that are more based in being helpful to mm-hmm. each other and working together in community and collaboration. So that's good. But the shadow side of that is if we continue to go at things the way that the dominant ruling class has gone after them in history, we're going to be looking at some war. We saw before this crisis developed, the tension between the U.S., China, Russia, and Iran had been exacerbated.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering how that is going to evolve.
Yeah, I mean, you probably see some sort of like, I don't know, generally lays itself like some sort of proxy war like Vietnam or, mm-hmm. you know, where they can sort of fight the enemy through a different, you know, I mean, you know, Assad is still around. So I'm pretty sure that would be a fun target. You know what I mean? Mm. You get a lot of different support through that and, you know, kind of hit at our enemies through that. I mean, North Korea is always an option, I suppose, you know.
Well, with us being so economically weakened and compromised in the United States, being the hardest hit by the corona crisis. Mm-hmm. So what that's going to do to our economic system and to our infrastructure when we think about healthcare, right? And then the parasitic industries around mm-hmm. what should be universal right for people, mm-hmm. The insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, they're already kind of waging a war on working people. But the weakened state of this society makes it less of a global superpower,
right,
and an easier target.
Yeah.
If people wanted to say, hey, you know, the sanctions that the United States dollar and government and economic and political interests have been able to use as a form of warfare, you know, against the Palestinians, against countries in Africa, against Cuba, right? What if countries outside of the West started to, and even some other countries in the so-called West started to utilize those tactics against the United States? I wonder if we're going to see that.
I mean, we are primed for losing our seat at the head of the table,
right?
For sure. I mean, we have poor leadership.
Mm-hmm.
We have people. We have a country that's emotionally unsettled. I mean, people believe in, I mean, Bill Gates is putting chips in their head now, and I mean, like, you know, all these like crazy right-wing conspiracies that are like now taking like mainstream action and like funneling and like providing a lot of these protests, quote-unquote, you know, protests, you know, like mm-hmm. a lot of like, wow, like we are sort of like at a very really vulnerable state, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean, we
yeah.
have. And you know, and it's, and I mean, really what it comes down to is like I haven't had a lot of faith in our leadership, as in it, how much it cares about people, But I would say right now we really have somebody at the helm who naturally doesn't really care about he will go for the biggest offer possible. You know what I mean? And that right. that suits him as opposed to worrying about how it would affect people. And that is straight from his resume, you know.
Real talk, straight up narcissist. Well, hey y'all, it's been good talking to you. Thanks for tuning in to Culture in Motion. Thanks for being here with me, Ryan.
Thanks for having me, Lewis.
And we'll talk to y'all soon. Support KBOO. Become a member. Go to KBOO.fm and become a member and support your community radio station. We out. Peace.
Peace.
Somebody help me, set me free. I can't take this new reality. How much longer can it be? Where's the humanity? I look around and all I see, masked faces staring at me. Keep your distance, don't touch me. Get your hands off my teepee. Somebody save my sanity. The COVID killer's coming after me. How much longer will it be? Where's the humanity? I'm sick and tired of staying at home.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm. Thank you.